Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
I'm Derek.
And I'm Ray.
I'm Alex Reed.
And welcome back to another episode of...
Thank you.
Hello, guys. Oh. How are you all? Cheers. Wow, can we have a bit more like...
Energy.
Come on down.
Hey. All right. So, how are you guys? One second. Welcome to Mostly Lit, guys.
Yes, welcome to Mostly Lit, another episode. I'm Ray, and these two insignificant people next to me are...
Wow, okay, fine. All right, I'm Alex Reeds, everybody.
I'm Derek Owusu.
So, do you want to take it away?
Yeah, all right, so... Normally how we'd start off with our podcast is we'll talk to each other and ask each other how our weeks has been.
What's our podcast about?
Okay, so Mostly Lit. I'll let you know what the lit stands for. It's literature. And lit. I don't know if you guys are in the lingo with, the young people of today.
A double entendre.
Oh, yeah. Amanda Teresa loves to say that.
Yeah.
It's a double entendre. Guys, we're just here to talk about books. And each week we'd pick a book to read. And this week we have chosen The Power by Naomi Alderman. But before we get into that, Derek, how's your week been?
Oh, it's been fantastic, you know, it's... No, I'm lying, it's been terrible. But, but that's how it is. Just work. I'm actually producing a new podcast.
Wow.
It's amazing, which...
I don't know Clarissa, why everyone's happy about that.
Our manager, Clarissa, founded it, and then I kind of came in as producer.
Yeah.
So we're doing that.
Through work, though, right?
Through work, because I work for Penguin Random House, so I'm doing it through them. And I
hope you don't leave us.
What for the? I mean, well.
Wow.
I mean, it depends what they're offering me, you know.
Oh wow. loyalty.
But that's been amazing. I just organizing things for. There's a book that I'm editing coming out, which just been organizing that. It's been very difficult trying to organize 21 writers, especially when they're just like guys from ends as well. They're not really.
You're dealing with deadlines and trying to get editing and stuff. Yeah.
Ends is like the gutter basically. It is. So it's been hard to kind of coordinate them, but it's coming together well.
Okay.
You know, everyone gave their essays in time except me, and mine is 4 weeks late.
Yeah, when Derek told me that
leadership.
When he said to me, "Oh, he's just finished his essay," I'm like, "I had mine done like 4 months ago because you're pressuring
fine.
Me."
It's fine. I'm the editor. It's all right.
Oh wow. Okay.
Nice. So when doing. Is that coming out?
March or April. That's with Trapeze.
Nice. Books. Well, congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
We look forward to reading all about the Mandem struggle.
The Mandem struggle. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So, Alex, how's your week been?
I have nothing to report.
Wow. Really?
About this week? Nah. Nothing at all.
Why are you people so bored? boring.
No, I mean, like, it was just, it's just, again, as like, parallel what Derek says, a lot of the time it's just work, a lot of the time. And I think that we just constantly so consumed with all the stuff we're doing and the projects that we're doing. I mean, that's all I've been doing.
Yeah.
Working. Every Saturday I'm tired, dragging myself to recording.
Yeah, good luck.
But yeah, that's me. But you...
I feel like I'm the only interesting person on
this.
You've
literally just arrived in the country.
Yes.
You want your life.
Yeah,
man.
I went to a work retreat to Madrid on Friday, and I came back like 7 this morning. No, 8 this morning.
Yeah.
But it was quite bad because, like, lawyers are wild and they just, like, party.
Because they're so uptight in everyday life.
Are you calling me uptight?
Yeah, I'm just asking. I'm asking a question.
But yeah, so, like, we had, like, a nice work retreat and my colleagues and I just went out and everyone was like, yeah, like, after the bar, just go to the airport. You don't have to sleep. Just do one. And I'm like, no. Like, I might be 25, but my actual inside age, I'm, like, 43. So...
Can I ask you a question? You know when you go,
I hate it when you do this.
No,
yeah.
I just want to ask. You know when you go to like these lawyer retreats and you're kind of out, you know, you go to a bar and stuff.
Yeah.
Do kind of like your partners and colleagues, do they offer you a drink, assuming that you drink?
Yeah.
Really?
So then you just have to say, you know, I don't. I do. Sorry, get me something else.
Don't you get offended that I'm wearing a hijab? Why are you offering me a drink?
No, because I guess that's their culture and.
But then that means they're not recognizing your culture.
No, but then. Because there are some hijabis who do drink, I guess. So...
Okay.
I mean, I prefer them ask.
I mean, I'm not trying to cause trouble or anything.
I'm just saying I prefer them ask. Mm-hmm. And, like, there isn't going to be that assumption. Sometimes there is.
Yeah.
But then sometimes you can see how awkward they are because they're like, I mean, I want to give you this drink, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I think just being quite open about it. But, yeah, like, it's a very different type of world.
Yeah.
But yeah, Madrid is so nice, guys. Mm. But the food is trash. I'm
annoyed,
so
actually,
sorry.
Because you can't come back from Spain and tell me that the food is
rubbish.
I was like, guys.
Okay, so I had to get like we had like these nice dinners, and oh my god, like I had to have KFC before going to the restaurant to eat because if it's not pork, and I don't eat pork,
so
if it's not pork. They're like, oh, you don't eat pork? Okay, vegetarian?
I'm like, no!
And I'm just like, yeah, like, it's just horrific. Like, I'm just like, the food.
But I mean,
I was actually really traumatized because the food was horrible.
It's not horrible, man.
Spanish cuisine,
you didn't eat steaks.
Yeah, but the steak wasn't
seafood.
Well, like, it wasn't
What is Spanish cuisine?
A lot of fishes, a lot of cheese.
Fishes is not a word, actually.
There's a lot of cheese.
No, there's fish, and I don't like fish. They gave me sea bass.
A lot of cold stuff, though, as well, actually.
Okay.
I was like, what is a sea bass? It's disgusting. Right. They just put, like, salt and pepper on it.
That's what you're meant to put on...
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway. So, okay. We are a literature podcast.
And we do dip into film as well.
Oh, yes, we do.
Yeah, we don't just talk about... food.
Yeah, we don't just talk about food.
So what's everybody reading?
Oh yeah, God, like,
oh, well, yeah, I want to know. What's everybody reading? What are you reading, Ray?
So I haven't read this week.
It's fine.
And
you read Vogue though. Did you read Vogue?
I did read an article from Vogue.
Just asking a question.
I haven't read this week, but I will read this week. But I've just been really busy, guys.
Okay, so, what are you planning to read?
The Zanzibar Wife.
Okay.
I've already started it, but I've just put it on hold for a bit.
Yep.
And the only reason why I picked it up because it has Zanzibar on the title. And I'm from Zanzibar, and I've never seen a book.
I made that mistake once by picking up Manuscript Found in Accra by Paulo Coelho. The book has nothing to do with Ghana.
Yeah, nah.
It's like Proverbs, just...
Yeah.
I think he thought he was Nietzsche or something when he wrote that book. It's absolutely terrible. Sorry to interrupt, but... Yeah.
Yeah, Paulo Coelho is trash.
He's not trash.
I mean, I just feel like people read The Alchemist at a time in their life when they're a bit clueless, and then all of a sudden, you know, it changes their lives.
You know, we do this every time on a podcast. Like, I think we just established The Alchemist is not a bad book.
It's not a bad book.
Your opinion.
It's not a bad book. Ray, you like Dan Brown.
I love Dan Brown.
I know you
like
Dan Brown.
And I never sit here and be made to feel ashamed liking Dan Brown.
But that's what I'm saying, so don't talk down to people like The Alchemist. Like Dan Brown. Sorry, anyway.
Some people are searching for enlightenment and they need the alchemist to, you know.
Yeah, the alchemist is an amalgamation of horoscopes. Like, you know, the metro, and you're like, your life will be like this.
What?
Yeah, it's very much
I think you need to read it again.
I think you need to read it.
I think you need it. You need the alchemist.
But yeah, so I'm not reading anything this week.
What am I reading? The Death of Noah Gloss. It's by a woman called Gail Jones. It's set in, I'm reading it for work, but it's set in Australia. Art historian dies in Italy and his children go to find him. I mean, that's all as much as I can muster.
So yep. You haven't read it yet.
I'm like a quarter in, and it's just, it's become a sort of weird mystery kind of crime thing. But I've never read anything from Australia, like based in Australia before. Yeah, so I'm just a bit, so I'm just a bit like, oh, what's going on?
Okay.
But yeah.
Okay. I'm reading.
What are you reading? Books that you're reading.
I'm just reading one, actually, small book. I'm reading Breakfast at Tiffany's by Truman Capote.
Oh!
Calm down.
Oh, I hate it. Oh! Yeah, I hate it.
He
hates the book.
Have
you seen the film?
No. You know what? I think I'm not even far into the book.
But it's not an amazing book.
It's not even that. I mean, I like Capote write well.
Yeah. But yes, I thought you just watched.
You know, right at the beginning of the book, there's just kind of like casual racist references that just make me feel a bit sick. I'm just like, is it even necessary? Does this need to be there?
Yes. At the time it was written though as well.
No, that's not an excuse.
Okay. So let's establish that now.
Not that.
Sorry.
When was it written?
I don't know what it was written, I don't know. But I just thought, okay, you know, to be honest, I should have known that the book would be racist because obviously Capote was friends with Harper Lee, you know, and she was an undercover racist in my opinion as well. So,
all right.
You know, apparently Dill in To Kill a Mockingbird is based on Truman Capote, apparently.
Apparently,
yes. Yeah. I think he said that because they were like, they grew up together.
I don't like this idea of you imposing undercover racism on someone and you don't even know that.
A lot of people don't know they're racist.
Yeah, but who are you to say that, my dear?
I'm a black man.
So?
So therefore, I can tell you if you're being racist.
I mean, I don't want to get into this whole is To Kill a Mockingbird racist or not debate, which
absolutely.
We're really going there, and I just feel like maybe we should focus on something else.
It's not racist in the way you're thinking, like, you know, like
in your face,
like
racism.
Part of darkness racist. It's not like that. It's just kind of like the undertones.
He's thinking about the superiority savior complex.
The white savior complex is absolutely Atticus Finch.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I don't know. Because what did you want him to do in the position that he was in?
Well, firstly, he has a mammy in his house. That's the first thing. Second of all, he basically says he recognizes like humanity, but he doesn't delve into black people as individuals. He likes this basically. If someone said, Atticus Finch basically says, I don't see race, I don't see color. That's the kind of racist.
I'm gonna defend
Atticus
him because he's a man who needs defending.
In my personal opinion.
No, for me, like when I read it, the first time I read it, it was Atticus Finch for me as a child was that consciousness in that book when I read it. And so for you to say that, for me, I'm just like, I totally get it though.
Yeah.
Like, I totally understand where you're coming from, but I feel like you're not doing him enough justice for the position that he was in.
Do you think Atticus Finch would be okay with Scout marrying a black man?
Oh, hell no. You know that, it's a no.
You know the answer's no. You haven't read Go Tell a Watchman.
I refuse to because I know what's in it and I just don't want to go there.
And what's interesting is that book was written before To Kill a Mockingbird.
I don't know.
Which means that when Harper Lee wrote To Kill a Mockingbird, in her mind she already knew that Atticus was racist.
Wow.
Anyway, so moving on.
Yo,
I'm really hurt.
Use gymnastics, bro. Wow.
I don't. It's just gonna ruin my view of Atticus Finch. I can't do that.
Yeah.
Because I really loved him.
Yeah.
Mm. I hate your guts.
Liberals do. Liberals love Atticus Finch.
So for this episode, we're doing The Power by Naomi Alderman. Brief rundown of the book.
Without spoilers.
We're
not gonna say anything.
It's our first episode. We're not gonna give spoilers because you guys might want to read it.
Yeah.
Everyone dies. I'm joking.
Well,
shut up.
How can I explain this? book.
So it's a dystopian thing.
Can I give just quickly? Basically, so it's a world where women develop powers. Basically, there's a thing called the screen that shows up on the collarbone, mm-hmm. and it allows them to control electricity.
Yeah.
So they can kind of, what it does is the electricity disrupts people's brainwaves, and they can control people with it. They can heal people with it. They can do all these things, and men don't develop this power. Although there's some anomalies that have the scheme.
Yeah.
And it's basically, how women then use this power, what they do with
what,
it,
what
how
happens next.
The world reacts to it, and what happens next. Right. Yes, so let's just, Alex, what did you think of the book?
I think the book was really good. I was a bit confused whether it was a general adult fiction book or a young adult fiction.
I don't think it's classed as YA.
I don't think it's classed as YA.
But when
you find it in Waterstones, it's in general fiction. But when I was reading it, I was thinking the way it's written could be a young adult fiction book just by virtue of what.
I don't know,
the characters are pretty young as well.
It's definitely sci-fi as well.
Yeah, it's definitely sci-fi. All the characters are young.
Yeah, I mean, do they deal with sex trafficking in YA novels?
Yes, I'm definitely sure they probably do.
They probably do in some places. But it's the more the age of the characters as well.
Mm.
So,
yeah, I mean, they're like, they start developing it, they start at what, like 14, 15, 16?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter because Pidgin English is kids and it's not considered YA.
Oh, no, it's not.
No, okay. Pidgin English is not YA.
Maybe the idea...
I think it's the way the book's written and the way they handle the themes that then put it into
YA. Yeah, it's from the perspective of young women and some men. But I think it's a really good book. It's a really good book. It did make me, it raises a lot of questions about power and about hierarchies and about the patriarchy and various different things in there. And what the world should look like.
Well, actually, the world looks exactly the same.
More or less. But anyway,
it's in the wrong hands, right?
And I think that's it's in the hands of women.
Yeah, yeah. So it's it doesn't mean
world.
It's wrong.
Yeah, yeah, this world doesn't like the real world.
Yeah.
I like the book as well.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like it?
I did like it, yeah, of course. I thought it was interesting. People obviously put this next to books like, 1984 and
I did kind
Brave
of get
New
it.
World.
I did. Yeah.
I don't think this book has got anything on 1984 at all. I think it's like Brave New World in that,
in the way that
Naomi Alderman handles her characters, she doesn't really flesh them out because she's more concerned with the ideas she's trying to
convey. And the characters, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, so there's a lack of characterization.
I think the character, what's her name, who went on to be called Eve, I think she was quite fleshed out.
I don't think so. I didn't connect with any character in the book.
That's because you're a man.
Well, Tunde's in the book. I didn't connect with Tunde either.
Really?
No.
I have an issue with him.
I empathised with one of the characters called Ali and Tunde, just Tunde as a journalist and Ali just because they did give you more context and more information about Ali than most of the other characters.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask a question.
I don't think that's enough though for characterization.
I wanted to ask a question. What was your take on religion when it came to the
book?
Can
I just give my overall take before you ask that question?
Okay, go for it.
Thank you. I'm joking. I have issues with the book.
Mm.
Mainly because I think I walked into it being like, great, this is going to be about a book where women have the power and men are subservient, but not in a as a reaction, but just as. And I, when I walked into it, it was very much like men are still powerful. However, it is only after women have this power whereby they can kill men that all of a sudden they're shook. And that annoyed me in a way because it was kind of like, well, I guess I just wanted to walk in to a book where women were just powerful and it isn't because that they're holding the reins of life. Do you know what I mean?
But then that's why men are powerful, because they are more aggressive, physically strong. I think that's what Naomi Alderman tried to do.
I don't think that is, like, currently in the world that we live in, I don't think men are powerful because they're stronger.
Not right now. But I mean, obviously, I don't know. This isn't written
in the age of antiquity. This is now.
I know, but obviously she's trying to do something here.
I know, but for me, it was annoying that women only get power as a reaction, like, as a reaction to men being afraid of their lives. And it isn't really actual power it's not really actual power, because even when they started developing these traits and these characteristics, they'd be called witches or they'd be...
But it was power. I think you did what Alex did. Like, you know, when you finished the book, you thought that the letters between Naomi and the other gentleman were like, well, I don't want to read that. Yeah. If you read...
I read them.
Like, okay, those letters. Basically, what it shows you that is that women are... Like, at the end of the book... Like, this is not a spoiler, it's just a funny thing. She basically says, when the guy who sent her the book and says, can you read my manuscript? She's like, you know, it's very ambitious and whatnot. I'm not sure how the public will take it. Have you considered, you know, writing under a woman's name as a pseudonym? Then maybe you'll get some more traction. Do you know what I mean? Which basically just shows you the dynamic in the world 5,000 years after events, the cataclysm, the events of the power. Mm. Women are on top. I am not convinced
as to them being on top, to be honest. I just wasn't convinced. Mainly, I just did not like the fact that the only way they were powerful is because they could kill you.
Okay,
I kind of wanted them to be powerful in a different way, ideologically.
How did men get power? How was patriarchy brought to life?
Because men are trash. I'm joking. That is an aspect of it. But at the same time, I don't think it was just because they could kill you. Do you know what I mean?
Of course.
But the thing is, if that was the case, women would be able to dismantle patriarchy now. Why have we not been able to?
Because you've been oppressed for so long. And the system
but
a system has been built on top
of women. It has not been built on physical aggression. That is an aspect of it, but it's not all of it.
It develops.
It's more mentality, right?
It starts off like that, then it develops into something else. That's what I thought.
Yes, but I feel like now it's more mentality. I just wanted this. I wanted the actual philosophy of women being powerful to be embedded in the psyche of people, not just,
They had to fight. There was a war had to happen.
I know what I mean?
Wars had to happen in order for them to shake all of that.
Yes, but...
And, like, you know, segregation of schools and various different, people fearing for different things.
But
people,
it's also just, like... It had to happen. It's terrorism. It's not...
That's how a lot of these structures were built, because they had to break them down, destroy them.
Terrorize them.
Like, there's even a bit in the, considering about, the flood. Noah's flood, to wash it all out, to start again completely, because you're trying to... We've run the system. If a whole nation is formed, which is like led by powerful women, but the rest of the world is led by powerful men, it's kind of like, you know, you need to actually start again completely and restart it.
But then how do you start again?
But this is what
she's
trying to bring.
I feel like the only way you can start again in this case is just to eliminate all men. I mean, obviously, we all got to do that.
Yeah. But I mean, I think it was just the whole destruction thing. It was just like, let's just completely wipe out everything. Because there was a thing called, did you read that bit about curbing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was like, they basically sterilized men so that they cannot have sex unless a woman, makes them kind of thing. So once you control the means of production, generally for, for humanity, then you can start, then things will just start happening.
Because even the actual power and the actual power of being able to electric people, some men even found pleasure in that. Even that Tunde guy, every time he talked about it, it was just in this very.
But then don't you see that? That's just the twist on how in society some women say, I love to be dominated by a man in the bedroom.
Like the power of it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just a kind of a play on that, isn't it?
No, I didn't think it was a play on that. I thought it was, I genuinely thought it was. This is me showing you I'm very powerful. Mm-hmm. This is the way in which I can do that, and yet you still are sexualizing this thing that could potentially kill you.
That's a good point, though.
So I'm just like...
Yeah.
But I didn't like that part. But anyway, you were talking about religion.
Yeah. There's a character in the book who ends up becoming Mother Eve, and she basically just turns the head on religion, essentially, doesn't she?
Do you think she turns the head on?
There was a bit, I'm sure there's a bit in there, and she was like, Muslims don't look up to Muhammad, look to Fatima. Christians don't look to Jesus, look to Mary kind of thing.
Or Catholics do.
Catholic, yeah, or something like that.
Yeah, she's like, I'm the mother and like the mother, the son.
Yeah.
That part was hilarious.
I don't think Naomi Alderman handled the religious aspect very well, in my personal opinion, just because it was kind of like, okay, I understand you're trying to say this is how religion is founded. But it's just obviously a lot more complicated than that, isn't it?
Well, she created the following. She created the following, the cult following.
No, she did that under... She duped them, essentially. Like, she didn't really create it out of actual, like...
Like fake miracles.
Yeah. Mm. She knew exactly what she was doing. And that little voice that she was talking to, whether she was, like, schizophrenic, whatever. I feel
I mean, you say she's... Well, is Paul in the Quran? Paul.
I don't know. What's his Arabic name?
I don't know. But it's kind of like people always say, you know, I'm hearing the voice of God, or
what does something tell you?
When Saul had his vision on the road to Damascus, I believe.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, did he just have a seizure or something?
Yeah, you know but that voice in, is it Ali?
Mm-hmm.
That voice was not godly.
Why not?
That voice was like, kill him, kill her.
Did God not send Abraham to kill his son?
Yes, but like, it was a test.
Oh, it was a test. Okay. All right.
Yeah. And this is she wasn't.
I mean, the God of
I feel like she did flip the head of religion a lot, though.
No, I'm just saying the God of the Old Testament has told people to slaughter a couple men, like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We can't pretend that you don't.
But I think you will see. How do I say this?
Your religion.
No, it's cool because if you were, like, would be at it. Don't worry.
All right.
But it's more so like in the voice in Ali was not nice. Like, was not a nice person. Even with like the tales, or when you are told about God, you know that you believe in this greater good. Even
but Ali or Mother Eve, what she did want to liberate women. Do you know what I mean?
She wanted to control them in her own way.
That for what she thought was the greater good.
But isn't that...
What? Dictatorship.
Precisely.
Isn't that what some people need?
Oh.
Yeah. Because you know...
You agree?
A little bit, yeah. Because we were talking about, remember when we had this discussion on choice feminism?
Yes.
Yeah.
And like,
oh wow, like, you're gonna bring up private conversations into the light. All right.
Okay, anyway. So
go.
Derek and I have always had this issue with regards to like hardcore militant feminism or choice feminism, when as a woman you should be able to choose everything that you do. And then there are like a different type of feminism where it says actually sometimes the choices that you make are inherently anti-feminist, and therefore in making such decisions you are actually just oppressing yourselves and other women even further.
What I basically say is that, you know, I always apply my thinking when I was like a Pan-African, you know, militant black guy, and kind of like just applying it to feminism, and I just think
I don't think you as a man can make that decision.
No, I'm not.
I guess I can.
I'm just saying this is just how I see it. I'm not saying that, I'm not giving anybody orders or anything like that, but I'm saying, you know, when people like Marcus Garvey always like, emancipate yourself from mental slavery. Mm. These choices are not made within a vacuum. You're making these choices within a society that has been created around your control. Do you understand?
Sure.
And I do feel like that the choices that people make have consequences. And I feel like, so when, if someone says to me, oh, you know, okay, we're fighting for the freedom of, we're trying to liberate black people, and someone says, well, it doesn't matter, let this person make the decision they want to make, if it affects us, it doesn't matter, as long as they have their choice, it's fine. I'm going to say, no, it's not fine. Mm. That's not cool. I don't really like that. Do you know what I mean? And from what I've read, I think that's how some radical feminists think as well. They don't really like choice feminism. Or they just basically say choice feminism is not the be all and end all of feminism. And then I was just kind of like, that's why I was relaying that back to her.
I always told you, like, I'm really against that. I think choice feminism is important, but I'm coming to understand, like, the idea of choices that you make aren't made in a vacuum.
Oh,
but then at the same time, it's like, how do you then tell someone, you know, we want to free you from like this oppression, but then you also can't make the decision that you want to make you ultimately happy. And then I guess it's that whole
you wait till
one
the
person.
War's won.
Yes, and when is the war going to be won?
That's
so
fine.
I think that's my initial problem is
the main question,
either way
though,
you go, you're still going to be.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
In a bit of pain, essentially. And that's my own, and then, like, we're not living until we're like 200, do you know what I mean? And this patriarchy has been going on for a while.
I mean, that sounds very selfish to me.
It is selfish.
Well, putting yourself ahead of the struggle.
Yeah.
But then what if in... You know, I have problems with this, guys.
Yeah. No, yeah. I get what you're saying.
I feel like...
It's a difficult one to kind of navigate,
exactly.
Right?
Because then if we are then going to rule under Mother Eve structure, it's let's make the decisions that are great for all of us, but at the same time, there will be some of you who will suffer, right?
Yeah.
But then it's like, is that... solving the problem, because then when give me a timeline, okay, so basically patriarchy is going to end in 2060, so cool, maybe if I make these decisions, but it's not going to be that way.
Then no one's going to give you a deadline because nobody actually really knows anything.
She wants a deadline for revolution.
Are you going to ask for a deadline on when patriarchy's going to end? Like, the fight's going to be continuing to keep going, you see what I mean? You can't just be out here.
I mean, I completely get where Mother Eve is coming from, you know, like, because obviously, you know, Ortega, she tweeted something the other day, and she was like, "You know,
tell
you
people
Ortega, she's a writer. She wrote the Little Black Book. She basically tweeted, she was like, you guys are lucky that women only want equality and not revenge." And that's absolutely fair enough, mate. Do you know what I mean? Like, so what, Muggy?
There's a lot of revenge in the book, though.
I was like, yeah, kill them all. Like, it was great.
That's what I mean. So then you've got the ideologies, which then become like that. Like, the whole idea is like to liberate women from the world. Yeah. But then you have the factions, which are people are more radical, and like the little sects, which are like off key kind of thing. So people are out here like subjugating everybody to fear. Some people are out here controlling people via religion, people out here controlling them via politics and whatnot. So then there's that issue there when it comes to revenge. You can't like really control. There was no control. It was just like this, in the first stages, there was this big like bloodlust kind of
thing. For example, the world that we live in today, with all the different types of oppressions, do you think the only way in which we can get out of that is for that initial...
It's gonna be anger.
Chaotic, blood-fueled rage.
Get the anger out of the way.
Do you think?
Yeah.
But then who'd be left?
I mean, look, let's just be realistic. This is what I personally think. If there's going to be a revolution or whatever, I don't believe there will be whatever, there is going to have to be bloodshed, because at the end of the day, the status quo was not put in place without bloodshed? So how do you think, why do you think you can get out of it?
So you're basically saying that there's like going to be like World War III, but very...
Not even World War, when I say bloodshed, just I'm not like, domestic. Let's just slaughter them all, do you know what I mean?
That's what I'm thinking.
No, that's not what I'm saying, but I'm just like basically saying, in order, for real liberation, some lives will probably be lost, and I think that's just, that's how it is.
It's not nice that we think that's so cool.
I'm not saying it's cool at all. I'm just telling how it is.
People have to die.
I do have one question, though.
Depression, depressing.
I know, but you see the way Naomi Alderman ends the book is kind of like... No spoilers. From what I got from it, anyway, no spoilers, is that what she's trying to say, I might be wrong, is that no matter who wields the power, society will end up the same. So what she's saying is that we don't wield power, power wields us.
There are some really maniacal people in this book.
But I read a review of this, and basically what the young lady was saying is that idea is inherently anti-feminist because she basically paints women's reactions to this power as exactly the same. In all cultures, all countries, everybody reacts to the power the same. And, you know what I mean?
As in uses
it to hurt men. Or hurt, do you know what I mean?
I mean...
What I wanted to ask is, what do you guys think? Do you think that there is a way to wield power that will ultimately create a different world? Or do you think that we're just going to recreate the world in the same way?
So there was this question about the Israeli army in the book. And they were like, they were already getting women trained up to go into the army to battle using their skin and their power.
Yeah.
So when people that hold the power start to think properly and be like, all right, so, women have this power now. Let's see how we can utilize it to strengthen our nation. Mm. That's when, and like work together with the nation.
Yes.
That's when you can...
With the nation?
I mean, yeah, because... how they utilize the power and depending on what the nation's values are anyway. So if you've got a strong identity in that nation and they said that, we want more women in the police force, we want more women doing this, that and the other because of the nature of their power.
So you think they should join up?
No, but that's ridiculous. No,
I'm just saying that's kind of how you would utilize it in a...
So do you think they should join? Really think we should just overthrow?
I think overthrowing. Mainly because, if you're now saying, oh, great, you have the skill where you can kill people, please come and join our police force.
To protect the country.
Maybe you can kill more black men on the street. No. Mm. Do you know what I mean? It's just to me, you are not toppling down the infrastructure that inherently makes the society, not the level playing field, for women.
So there will definitely be bloodshed.
Precisely. And I think what patriarchy does so well, right, and capitalism does so well, is its ability to take something and just sell it, right? Even feminism. I sometimes have a real issue when I see feminist, slogans on T-shirts, right? Because I'm just you are feeding this really amazing ideology that is here to empower us. Mm-hmm. You're taking maybe 1,000 T-shirts, printing out a name, there's probably some poor women making that or poor children who are not being paid enough money, and then you're going to sell that on Topshop and then we're going to buy it. Do you know what I mean? So it's like the capitalist...
You really gave us the whole narrative there.
It's just annoying. So I just feel without complete... And I'm not trying to be let's completely destroy the world, but without an actual understanding of how... of the intricate levels of social economic infrastructure and how it really destroys people's lives, you can't just take something and be like, oh, that's great, let's add it in. I think it needs to be completely dismantled.
Adapt it to the country. So obviously, if they go in, if the more and more women have this power, put them into the defensive,
But are these women being... Who's putting them in? The men?
Depends on who's in... Obviously, whoever's in government.
Yeah.
But you've got to it's the channels to get to these spaces. There's a woman in there who's in politics and she finds her way.
Oh, is that the woman who kills her husband?
Mm. No, the mayor.
Okay.
So, when you were talking, kind of just two things just popped into my head. So, it's like what Kehinde Andrews said. He wrote a book on black radicalism.
Yeah.
He basically said...
Turn it over.
Yeah, if
destroy everything.
Yeah, no, basically, if an institution is inherently racist, putting more black people in there does not eliminate the racism. So if an institution is in, you know, is inherently sexist, putting more women in there is not going to change things. So therefore, we have to just tear the whole thing down.
Yeah.
So therefore, if the world, if society is inherently sexist, in order to create a new society, you have to just, on some like, God flooding, do you know what I mean? You have to get rid of everything. Do you understand?
You know.
And even with the commodification, sorry, excuse me, this popped into my head, is, you know that episode of Black Mirror? With that sexy man Daniel Kaluuya, you know when he's basically got the thing to his throat and he's talking about, you know, this, he's like fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, and then Tutu's now they've commodified him and he's on TV selling the knives and stuff like that. Therefore, like, you know, it's easy to commodify pain or revolution or whatever, aggression, blah blah blah.
So I'm like, I think the system that commodified that's what we need to break down, because it's just a cycle. But my only problem is I don't think people pay enough attention to, after this, the destruction is done and we have complete chaos, what next? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's the most important part, because we're all very much about, yeah, let's break the system down, like let's tear it down. Okay, once you've done that, what next? Yeah. Who's going to pick up the reins? Who's going to clear up your mess? And how do you then build the blocks? I think you need to know how to build the blocks where there's now equality in the society that we're in, rather than just being so much like, okay, how do we tear it down and then destruction? And then it's so easy to if we do what we know, right? So we'll probably make the same damn system again. Do you know what I mean?
But just with women on top.
Women are always going to be on top.
I mean,
but no, I definitely.
There's some really interesting characters in.
But yeah, you guys should read the book.
Why did you not like Tunde?
Okay, so this is why I didn't like Tunde. There's a guy in here who's a journalist, and his name is Tunde. He's a Nigerian journalist, and he goes around different countries to highlight the rebellion, essentially, and how women, he goes to Saudi Arabia and he meets this woman called Noor, and she's like, yeah, women can't drive in this country, so let's blow up these cars. And he's basically a journalist who works for CNN.
Freelance.
Yeah, he's a freelance. Yeah.
You have to say that he's freelance.
He's freelance.
So he's probably not making that much money.
He's making a lot.
Is he?
Yeah, for the content.
Yeah,
he's giving
he did like £5,000.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that was the anyways. So essentially, he goes around showing the world the rebellion and these women, and I really didn't like that because still, like, in a world where women are rebelling, it's the man that's telling the woman's story, and he's the one going around showing the world. And I just, and he's writing this massive book, right?
What?
And I was like,
he's the only male perspective in the book, though.
But let's not forget,
Okay,
in order for me to obviously rebut what you're saying, I have to give something away.
Okay.
Let's not then.
Or should I not?
No.
You let everybody have a moment. Because she's wrong, but I mean...
No, now he has to say it.
No, you can't, because I don't want the book to be spoiled for people.
No, it's not a massive spoiler. It's just like...
Yeah, but it's a spoiler nonetheless. It's a spoiler nonetheless.
It's a tiny one.
It's a spoiler nonetheless.
I don't care.
Let me... Okay. Basically, Tunde has his work stolen by a woman and she takes credit for it.
Yeah.
And then, so basically...
Yes, but it doesn't matter because the perspective in which the story was written, it doesn't matter if she took credit for it, which is a very man thing to do, by the way.
I think that was the point, right?
Yeah, I know. But I just feel like
she can always alter the perspective.
Yeah, exactly.
She can't, because she's like,
why?
She's saying, oh, actually,
she's stolen the story.
She's stolen the story, but changed. The story that the things that she's seen or Tunde seen is not like what she saw. Like Tunde even sleeps with that Noor woman, and what she's gonna say, you know?
No, Noor sleeps with him.
Oh, that's true.
That's some real shit, though. Yeah, it's crazy.
But cool. So yeah, I mean,
like the book. Yeah.
So overall, we like the book.
Well,
I like the book.
I enjoyed it.
I think the book gives you a lot of things to talk about. But it's written really well, which is what I was quite surprised.
Oh, she's amazing,
right? Yeah, like it's written really well.
I wonder what she's gonna follow this up with.
Yeah, it has to be a sequel.
I don't know about sequel, but I think her next book, what's it gonna be like?
The Power. I don't like the name though.
Why?
Just why would you not?
Could have been called something different, like.
Like what? This is what it's about.
No.
Yeah.
I don't know. Skeen. You know, that's the.
No. Anybody know what that is, man? I can't even say it out loud. It's written really weird.
So I know we at this part of the show we normally do like mostly flicks where we talk about a movie and stuff.
We
haven't planned anything. I wanna just bring a movie and.
No, but if we haven't watched the movie, we can't.
Okay, Jerry Maguire. Have you seen Jerry Maguire?
Have
you seen Jerry Maguire?
Of course.
Let's talk about Jerry Maguire. So I want to know. So Alice saw it recently, Ray. I think you saw it recently.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of the movie? Ray, you're grinning teeth, so I know you liked it.
I loved it. I really liked it because this is like the first role that I've seen Tom Cruise and he's not doing that impossible stuff.
Mission Impossible stuff.
And apparently, fun fact. I literally thought that's all he did. But fun fact, apparently he's really short. And when he was married to Katie Holmes or whatever, he'd have to wear like platform heels.
I don't know, it's true.
Like the Metro, I saw it on the Daily Mail. This was like when I was really young, guys. You know, I don't read that establishment anymore.
Case in point.
I read the FT.
Wait, why would he have to wear the heels?
Because she was tall.
I read the FT.
And obviously, toxic masculinity, he didn't want to be seen as being short next to his woman. Ex-woman.
Okay.
Yeah, obviously.
Have you not seen the way that the cameras are angled in every film he's in to make him look like his average height?
But anyways, Jerry Maguire. I liked it. I don't even know like what it is about it that I loved. Oh, I think I loved, what's that woman's name? His love interest.
Renee Zellweger.
Yes, Bridget Jones. Super cute, right?
So cute. Her son's so cute as well.
Right, Stuart Little,
Stuart Little.
Sorry, that's how I know people. Just like, they were in this film.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really liked it. I love their like love relationship, even though like they got married and he was trash, and then he had this like epiphany, oh, I actually do love her, which is what men always do.
It wasn't convincing to me.
It wasn't to me either. I don't think so. I think he was like, you know what, now I've got this really great deal.
Do you know what I mean?
Why not?
Exactly.
I think he loved the boy more than he loved her.
I wasn't even convinced by that.
No, I think he did love the boy. Because, you know, he had like father issues and stuff.
I'm just not convinced by him. The whole film. I don't like it.
You like it? Wow.
You don't like the movie? You don't like Cuba Gooding Jr.?
Show me the money!
You don't like that shit?
Oh, man. When he started doing that, I cringed. I was like, what the hell are you doing?
I think it's because...
I was like, what are you doing?
You probably heard it so much in popular culture. Wait, when Tom Cruise said it or Cuba Gooding?
Cuba Gooding said it.
And then, obviously, like, when... then he had, like, a kind of a hissy fit in the bathroom. And he was like, show me the money!
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, what is happening here? It's like, it's actually all very mad. It was all very 90s. It was all very, like...
I like his... wife.
Oh, she was lovely.
Regina King.
Yeah, she was amazing. Their little relationship was nice, but it was very much overdone. I think so. Yeah, it was just like kissing all over the place. Like, okay, we get it. It wasn't a very like intellectual film, was it?
Like, okay, we get it.
No, it's true.
You're married.
Maybe he was cheating. He was doing way too much.
Oh wow!
I think
so. A black man can't even be nice to his wife without you thinking that he's cheating. Okay.
I mean, he's doing a lot.
I know you say it wasn't intellectual, but what about the question that it poses right at the beginning, that should you put your morals before your actual career, before money?
Yeah.
Because obviously that's what got him in the mess in the first place.
Yeah.
I mean,
most definitely, yeah. You mean
what?
Put your morality ahead of your career.
So let's say, for example, you got a contract,
right?
And you read the contract,
mm-hmm.
and the contract you knew would basically could 250,000 women
black
in
women.
Danger.
Oh, I couldn't do that.
See,
women, but if it was men,
so would you?
Humanity,
just,
even.
So would you literally say, "I'm not working on this contract"? Tell the truth, Rick.
My pay rise or my humanity?
Yeah.
Which one you choose?
Say your bonus was 2 weeks away.
Like there was even a bit.
Oh my god!
There was even a bit in the film where he's trying to take people with him, and she's like, "Well, my pay rise is in 3 weeks."
I'm not about to
come with you.
I would like to think that I would make the right choice.
Which is.
Humanity.
Well, I'm just double checking.
Yeah, but I'd like to think that I'd make that choice.
Okay.
Wouldn't we all, right? But you know, responsibilities and all, mortgages need to be paid, I suppose. Children, you know. It's sometimes very easy to turn the blind eye, but it's horrific.
Mm.
And I think more people do it than we'd like to think.
Turn a blind eye to what?
Injustice.
To people.
No,
but you guys really didn't find the film corny.
Yeah, but I think that's the point.
It was corny, but it's
you had
corny.
Me, you had me at hello.
What?
Shut up. Just shut up. When I started. I'm like, what is happening?
I love it.
Why did you make me watch?
I'm like, oh my god. Hello.
I love Cuba Gooding Jr.'s character. I just felt like
he's annoying.
He was annoying, and then he became kind of like, you felt sorry for him when he's like, Jerry, just tell me what to do. Tell me what to sign and I'll sign it.
Yeah.
You feel sorry for him. But then at the end, when he's crying, he gets 11.4 million, you're happy for him. Like, yes.
Why do you know the exact amount?
Oh, well, so many times. But you're happy for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
And he's a good man because he always tries to tell Jerry, like,
tell the woman,
exactly.
You don't love her. Tell
right, because even in the video, it shows that he wasn't really present at the wedding.
Yeah, man, sweating.
He was like,
that is so mean. Imagine your husband, like, you're married, that like, you've married him, and you just see that he's not into you. Wow.
I think that happens to a lot of people, probably.
Wow.
That's sad. She's got the money now, so.
Yeah, she's got the money.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was Jerry Maguire. Great movie, absolutely fantastic. One of my favourite rom-coms next to Notting Hill.
So this is it, right? I don't know why you like Notting Hill, because it's not that great.
It's fantastic.
No, it's not. It's just...
It's corny. That's not what London life is
like. No, like Hugh Grant London.
Listen, it's middle class London life. Okay, cool. But at the end of the day, there's some universals that I can relate to.
Such as
the love. I think I love Hugh Grant's, you know, his corniness, he's, you know...
And you can relate to that?
He's awkward.
Are you that English?
It's not even about being... It's just about being an awkward person.
Mm.
You know,
I feel like you've got much more game than Hugh Grant.
Well, thank you. I don't think I do.
But I guess he's got this, like, dashing, middle-class, white boy clumsiness about him. Yeah. That is quite...
It's an endearing
I guess, yeah. But I actually didn't like... what's her name?
Julia.
Yeah, I didn't like her character. I just felt like she was...
Shallow.
Yeah, I just was like... I just felt like, oh, you know, I'm an actress and woe betide me. I can't eat.
I think that was the point.
I know, but I just was like, okay, get over it.
Yeah, so were they when they were, like, giving out the you know, the brownies, whoever has the hard life. And she says, oh, she's all these things, and it's like, nah, we're not buying it.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't think it's that amazing of a British rom-com.
What?
I think...
It is the British rom-com.
No.
Next to Four Weddings and a Funeral.
So you like Richard Curtis then?
Huh?
You like Richard Curtis films?
I love Richard Curtis.
So you like Love Actually?
I like period dramas.
I don't like The Boat That Rocked. I think that's rubbish.
You don't like Love
rubbish.
Actually? You like Love Actually?
I don't like Love Actually.
What? I love Love Actually.
Love Actually.
Are you crazy? The woman with the two truck legs and Hugh Grant? Amazing.
I love one scene in Love Actually.
I like that film.
I love that
one. Woman with the two truck legs. You're rude.
No, that's how they describe her. No, I don't think she has two truck legs. She's gorgeous. But yeah, that's what they say. And I'm like, that's rude.
Yeah. Wow, okay.
But Love Actually is lovely, especially the little kid, you know, who was Manny McPhee.
Yeah.
And then he goes to his love and nobody will allow that to happen.
I love Hugh Grant dancing in Number 10 Downing Street.
Yeah.
That's like my favourite bit. I think that's everybody's favourite bit.
Yeah. That's not my favourite bit.
You don't like that bit?
It's a good Christmas film.
I like period dramas. Period dramas make for the best rom-coms ever.
Period dramas?
Yes.
A period drama is not a rom-com. There's two different dramas.
Shut up. Yes, it can be a rom-com.
A romantic comedy period drama?
Yes.
Like what?
Oh, like Emma. Or Pride and Prejudice. That's a comedy, right?
That's not a comedy. It's not a comedy.
Isn't it a comedy?
No, I guess it's a period.
But you always
film.
Like Jane Austen's funny.
Jane Austen is fucking hilarious, mate.
Well, then it's a comedy, right?
Well, no, she's a bit more, you know.
What,
interesting.
More depth than that.
Really?
Of course she has more depth. Are we really going to do this?
No, we're not.
Okay,
we're
good. Jane Austen is incredible. Persuasion is one of the best books ever written. Thank you very much.
Cool. Okay, well, so... we're going to stop rambling on now. What we're going to do is just open the floor to
any questions literature
comments,
related.
Any disagreements?
Oh, child, I'm tired.
You know, you've got the mic and come over to you.
Yeah.
I'm actually tired.
The first question is always the hardest.
Oh, we have a question right at the front.
Hey,
I know you.
Yeah, it's you.
Yeah. Hi. I'm here again. My icebreaker question is, what are your guilty pleasure reads?
Oh, that's a nice question. Derek, you go first.
My guilty pleasure is, people have probably never heard of these books. Basically, there's a ex-politician, comedian, writer called Giles Brandreth, and he writes these Oscar Wilde murder mysteries. He writes Oscar Wilde murder mysteries, right? Where Oscar Wilde partners up with oh my God, what's his name? He wrote Sherlock Holmes. What's his name again? Arthur Conan Doyle. He partners up and they solve mysteries together and stuff. It's fantastic. But it's not really, people don't really rate it, do you know what I mean? People don't really, they think Giles Brandis is a bit corny and whatever, but that's my... That and the Rosie Project.
No, I love the Rosie Project.
Yeah, I know, but it's corny, isn't it?
No, I mean, it's lovely. No. I would not be afraid of saying I read the Rosie Project and I love it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Fine. Okay. You, Ray, what's your team?
Okay, so my guilty pleasure reads is Everything Sophie Kinsella. I'm so sorry I said that out loud.
You chose Sophie Kinsella over Dan Brown. Is Dan Brown?
So, I'm not ashamed of saying I love Dan Brown.
Okay.
And I'm not talking about the Da Vinci Code or whatever.
What are you talking about? Digital Fortress.
Digital Fortress is one of the best, well, not the best book, but it's really cool. Mm. And I just don't think that you, I feel like you're really rude. Yeah. And you need to stop bringing this up. Yeah. And I'm really offended.
Twice today.
Right? I will read Dan Brown, although Origin was not good at all.
Yeah. What did Kinsella write?
Confessions of it.
Confessions of Shut
it. Oh, I've seen the movie. There's a movie, right?
Yeah,
I saw the movie.
But like all of them, like she has a baby, and you know, yeah, I love them, and I read them all of summer. So before I started university, I was like, I'm going to read all the classics, and I bought all the classics, and I never read them.
The classics, as in
like the classics, you know, like
classic Sophie Kinsella.
No.
The classics.
Oh, classics.
No, like okay. Yeah, like okay. Madame Bovary and War and Peace and all that rubbish. So I like Sophie Kinsella, and I love to read Jeffrey Archer. I don't know if you guys know Jeffrey Archer. Yeah. Wow. You don't like him? Okay, yay for Jeffrey Archer. Okay, so I guess that is a guilty pleasure, right? So I love Jeffrey Archer, even though he's very problematic and he went to prison and he's probably an asshole. Yeah, all of the above, but Cain and Abel?
No. Apparently not.
No, but no. They're really, really, really cool guys. We'll please go and read them. Yeah, that's me. Alex, your turn.
My guilty pleasures tend to be crime fiction novels.
Why is that guilty pleasure?
I don't know, because I feel like... You know
what rates crime fiction?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's...
Sherlock Holmes is crime fiction.
Yeah, but that's like uppity crime fiction.
I asked Derek to read crime fiction and he went out and bought John le Carré and
it's crime fiction.
I was talking about Harlan Coben.
Okay.
Lingle Barkley, like James Patterson.
I've got some Yo Nesbo at home.
Who are these people?
Yo Nesbo, you know
better. Yeah, but I feel like you go for like the higher part of the
trash.
Oh yeah.
Yo Nesbo.
Of the genre books.
What do you write?
Okay, I mean, I don't know. I just thought he was
a crime fiction novelist, but it's like putting him against like Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, which are quite
That's a great book.
That's what I'm saying. Those are crime books, but then there's like the proper just the page flicking ones that people churn out.
In terms who you talk about, Yo Nesbo and I forgot her name. It's terrible, forgotten her name. Yeah, what wrote the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo?
Was it a guy?
It was a woman. Stieg Larsson.
Oh, was it? Is that a woman?
It's wait.
A woman.
Oh, are you sure? No.
It's a man.
It's a man.
Stieg.
Oh, it's a man. Oh, I thought it was a woman. Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay, he's dead. But... yeah. But yeah.
Oh, that changes the way. Okay, never mind.
It tends to be like crime novels, the ones that you just like the page flicking, just straight up action, not much depth at all. But ooh.
Twilight books as well.
Oh, Twilight.
I can't. Yeah, no. I did that, guys. So.
Yeah.
Wow.
Have you done 50 Shades?
No.
Right. I haven't, but I just. Have you? Anyone here done 50 Shades? Put your hand up.
Put your hand up high.
Higher.
No.
Yeah. Cool, okay.
So, yeah.
Nah, yeah.
Any other questions? Research. For research.
Any other questions?
No, I can't see what you have any. Fantastic.
Cheers well.
Yay. We're done.
Okay.
Thank you guys so much for coming.
Thank you for coming, guys.
And we hope you guys go and listen. You can catch us on Twitter at Mostly Lit, Instagram at Mostly Lit Pod. We're on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google.
Everywhere that you can find podcasts.
And yeah, I hope to see you guys at our other events. Do we have any announcements?
No, the next place we're at is Cheltenham.
Yes.
You guys going to travel all the way down to Cheltenham?
Yeah.
I thought Cheltenham was in Wales. Apparently it's not.
Close enough. close enough, yeah. I guess.
Is Cheltenham near Wales?
Yeah, apparently. Well, I thought it was in Wales.
How long is it going to take us to get there?
A long time.
I mean,
we can have this discussion.
These are the questions that we have.
Thank you guys so much for coming. We really hope you enjoy.
New episode out tomorrow. So.
When we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweater starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.